हरिः ॐ सहनौ भवतु, सहनौ भुनक्थु, सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so reading from Paramatma Sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarna 3, Bhagavan is the highest aspect of the absolute truth. Right? So bottom of page 72. The Lord praises Pancharatra. The Lord, making his appearance among the sages of Narada, produced the Pancharatra scriptures, from which one learns how devotional activities free one from the bondage of karma. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.8. Thus it is proved that Pancharatra is without writing. Riti, having analyzed it, see, because what we're doing here is it's very important, because we're going to we're establishing how then the material world is how you say it? Coming from the Lord, the world is real, Lord's real, there's a transformation of the energies. That's how you get the material world. That's how the Lord is beyond all this. Right? Then you get how then he is controlling all this. Right? As Paramatma controls the energies, everything like this. And so then the creation means its destruction. He's above, Shiva is above everybody else. Right? And so then. And that way, then the Lord is supreme, right? But we're dealing now with Paramatma. But now the next feature in the Dasavul is Krishna's Rasa, right? The Lord of Rasa, right? Means so he's the supreme absolute truth. He's the Lord of his energies, and then he's the, Lord of Rasa. So then, as you see in the Chakra Shloki, how he is everything, So that takes care of the Bhagavad Sadharva. Then how everything that you value, it's all, if you don't see it as him, it's illusion, because he's controlling everything, it's his laws, so therefore Paramatma. Then he says in the third verse that he's beyond, right? He's beyond all this. So being beyond all this, that means there's his original, feature beyond, in which he deals with that. So then here, the Pancharatra, and then in that field of he's beyond, that's where Rasa is, right? And so then, as the Pancharatra is established in the Chakra Vyuha, and in the Chakra Vyuha, Shankar, Shankarjumna, Aniruddha, they are the Purusha avatars, right? And then Vasudev is beyond. So we're trying to get to that point of beyond. That's the important element, right? So that's the next step. And then when you have beyond, then you're going to have the different levels of the Bhagavan realization. The majesty, the sweetness, and all that, and then within the sweetness, and like until you come up to the topmost position. So we see it's following that same point of discussion and all that you see with all the others are there. So all of the discussions of Lord Chaitanya, then they're all put together, right, in the Sandarbha. So you're going to have Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, the aspects about how he's the absolute truth, like this, right? And then, but with Sanatana Goswami, then establishing the process, of devotional service beyond that. So you're dealing then with Bhagavan, then the Abhideya of that with Rupa Goswami, and then the Prayojana with a Ramananda Rai. Right? So then all these features will all be nicely put into their place, because there's so many things that connect and all that. So now we're taking us and going to this next level that we're setting that up, because we're getting to the end of the Paramatma Sandarbha. And so now he's setting up naturally for the next one. right? So the whole point is in the context of what we have, you're bringing it to the next. And then when you get to the next, that's the next study, right? In the modern is that the other one ends and then you have to introduce the new one, right? So the introduction is in the beginning of the new subject or the new feature. But in the Vedic, it's at the end of the previous one. What's the advantage? Like that, because you can say, no, but you know, you haven't discussed it yet, so you need it as an introduction. But the point is then if you do it that way, you don't get the summit. Right? You don't see where Krishna is part of, as Brahman meets, is then connected with Paramatma, how Paramatma is connected with Bhagavan. You know, and then there it also showed Brahman and Bhagavan. And so, but then it goes on to the Paramatma. So you see the Sangati, because if you don't see the connections, you don't actually know how to use it on a very broad range. See, because if I only know the subject itself on its own, then I can technically use it, you know, for tactical advantage, right? But that's as far as I can do, because I don't know actually what the subject is for, how it's connected to everything else. So how all the different subjects connect together, that's your operational platform. That's where you have something organized and it works together, a big thing all together. You know, it's just like, let's say in a kitchen. In the kitchen, you're going to have the cleaning that's there, right? You're going to have the preparation like that. You know, before that, you're going to have, making menus and planning. You're going to have marketing, you know, so planning, marketing, cleanliness of the kitchen, preparation, there's cooks cooking, and then there's going to be serving, right? So these six aspects. So someone, knows marketing, right? So knowing marketing, they don't know what that, they just know they get these ingredients. And somehow or another, kitchens always get these kind of ingredients. So they have an idea, okay, you know, cooking stuff must use this kind of ingredients, right? But that's as far as they know. The guy who's cleaning, he just knows that the place is clean and this goes here and that goes there. And when this guy comes in, he makes this kind of mess. And those ones come in, they make that kind of mess, you know, and so that's all he knows. Right, the preparation, he knows he cuts and this and that. He has a little bit of an idea, but not so much. Because even if he's preparing, doesn't mean that he can necessarily cook. And he doesn't know why it's cut this size. It's small, it's big, it's long, it's square, it's rectangle, it's shredded, it's grated. He doesn't know. He might know, but he doesn't necessarily have to know. You can be a great kitchen assistant. All you have to know is if he says, cut these in small cubes, you know what that means and you can do it perfectly. You don't have to know why it's used. The people who serve, right, they just know that these preps in there and they're served in this order, they go with this. You know, they may, if they're a little bit better, they know a little bit more, but otherwise they know how that's done, right? And the person who makes all the menus and the planning, they don't necessarily have to know how to cook. They just have to know who they're cooking for and that kind of thing. And so therefore, what's the occasion? So therefore, it's we're cooking for 20 people and it's a special occasion, so we'll do this kind of menu. Or we're cooking for 20 people and we're just trying to, you know, it's just something in between like that. It's a little thing. It's not meant to do a snack. But now the cook, you know, they need to know, you know, if they want to be good at what they're doing, means they have to know all that. Of course, someone can just know just the cooking, their prep. But when you know the whole thing, right, that's then when everything starts to work. So the difficulty is if there's no sangati or no connection, you can't move to those higher levels, right? That's the difficulty. So in the modern knowledge, you just learn your thing and it's so compartmentalized and all that, that it's that specific, and you don't know beyond that. I was saying the other day, remember when I was, you know, back in the 60s, I remember that you had a BA, you had a BSc, and you had a BEd, you know, for education. You had three kinds of degrees. All the different subjects and specialities fit into those three. And so if you said you had a BSc, oh, in what? You know, oh, in chemistry, or in biology, and this and that. And people were happy with that. Or in education, oh, yes, I deal with, you know, how you say, toddlers and all. Oh, no, I deal with math at the high school level, or I deal with this, like that, you know. And in the arts, oh, in what, you know, oh, in music, or it's in this, or it's in literature, or it's in arts, or didn't matter. But nowadays, you see, the degrees are so specific to the specific topic that it is. So that there must be, I don't know, 50, 100 different little groups of letters that you get. And so then the thing comes up is that you think, oh, see, it's more exact. Yes, it is more exact. But the problem comes is people don't see the range that it functions in. So their vision becomes more narrow. It means more, okay, more exact, but it's more narrow. And so they can't see how what they're doing fits in with society within their life and all that. Like professionals, much of the time, they don't have a life. Okay, the lawyer's working, or the doctor's working, or like these guys are working, you know, 12, 16 hours a day. Okay, great. And why are you doing that? Well, it makes money and all that. Okay, what are you going to use this money for? So I can maintain myself, so I can keep making money. That's pretty stupid. Right? So the whole point is they don't have a life. So people can't see that these connections on how, and without seeing how everything connects together, how do you understand how it's applied? What's it for? So that's the importance, is the sangati, that by knowing, appreciating that, then you can see how it's used, you know, in the bigger picture. How this subject naturally goes into that subject. So I'm going to have the whole connection in that brought here. And then, you know, you can have an introduction, but it'll connect back to the previous and then show where you're going. So that's the whole thing, is you have to have this sangati. Otherwise, if you don't have that sangati, you don't actually have something solid. You know, it means you have knowledge and skills, in which everybody talks about. People talk about knowledge and skills like that. Or they talk about values on their own, meaning just character. But they don't talk about applying that character. They say, oh, be good. How does be good look like? Be nice to people, okay? How are you supposed to be nice to people? What does being nice to people look like? Right? If you bump into another person, how would being nice unfold? What would it look like? And then you'll go, oh, I don't know. You just said be friendly, be that. Okay, what does friendly look like? Right? Because it's separated from knowledge and skills. And then the knowledge and skills is separated from the values. So even though we talk about these three, knowledge, skill, and values, there's no sangati. Is the skill based on knowledge? Where does the knowledge come from? How do you know it's actually a skill? You say, oh no, but it's there and they're teaching it and all this and that, but how do you know it's a skill? And it's based on knowledge, because after 10 years, it's of no value. You know, just like, let's say you go to IT. And so you spend 4 years doing your IT course. But everything that you've, anything means now, let's say you're at the end of the degree, right? You're just finishing your degree. Whatever you learned within the last 6 months still has some value. The other 3.5 years has zero value. Things have changed. The technologies have changed. The way people use things have changed. So it doesn't even matter anymore, right? So that's the thing. Everything keeps moving in this, in the modern context, because it has no root in the absolute. So therefore, it's loose. It's like a boat in the water without a rudder. It just moves around as it pleases, and you don't know which way it's going to go. The wind comes up, a wave comes up, you know, the whale bumps into your boat. You know, like this, you know, so then it's a problem. And so they don't actually see what's going on. They're just carried away. It's like the animals. It's just raining. Okay, you deal with the rain, you know, then the sun comes out, you deal with the sun, you know, there's something to eat, you deal with that. that but they think they're wild, they're free, right? The wild animal thinks they're free, but they're completely controlled by their environment. So the Vedas is trying to make you aware of all these things so you can see it in context of the absolute. Seeing in context of the absolute, then you have what is knowledge, what is skill, what are qualities, how those qualities are applied. You know, you have to know these things. And you can say, oh, but that's so strict and loud that, you know, in the real world, we don't deal with it. No, in the real world, they deal with that, just not with the absolute. Right? You're at a formal program, you meet someone, how do you deal with that? You know, you shake their hand. What kind of shake your hand? Is it a limp shake? It's a hard shake. How long do you shake for? When do you let go? Like that. Whose hand do you shake first? All these things are there. It's just the common person isn't exposed to that, so doesn't know it's there. So that's the difficult. So that there is an absolute knowledge and things like that, then those who actually deal practically with the world don't actually have so much of a problem with that, if you can explain it practically. But your general person or your so-called intellectual, they have it because they think it's speculation. Whatever I think, that's what's real. It's like Duryodhana. He's running his kingdom. He's doing all these different things and all that. And then he deals badly with the Pandavas. Nobody does anything, right? The demigods don't come down. He doesn't get hit by a lightning bolt. The earth doesn't, you know, open up and he falls inside. You know, when he goes for a swim in his pukura, when the meg doesn't come and swallow him up. You know, so all these different things like that. So he's thinking, see, I can do whatever I want. I control the demigods. He literally says this. I mean, no one in the universe, no demigod or any, would be foolish enough to support someone who I don't like. So I don't like the Pandavas. Therefore, you see, the demigods don't support the Pandavas. Therefore, if we have a war, of course I'm going to win. Everyone's saying the demigods will take the side of the Pandavas and all that. You know, like that. But he's saying, but no, they won't, because they're afraid of me. I'm supreme. He literally thinks like this, Duryodhana. Otherwise, if he didn't think like this, why would he be such a big demon? And why would the Mahabharata, he plays such a prominent feature? You know, if it was just things, you know, I could eat more ice cream than anybody else. I'm the supreme lord of this block on eating ice cream. He's most likely not going to feature as a prominent character in Mahabharata. Right? So this is the thing, is that you're going to prove one thing after another. So now that you've established Veda, and then all the different things based on the Veda, right? So now we've established Brahman and Paramatma based on the Veda. And so that's very solid, because everything goes back to the Veda. But now we see from the Veda, or known as Agama, means that which comes from. Then Agama, then you have the Pancharatra. And the Pancharatra then describes the supremacy of Vishnu over all the other demigods and this and that. And it's only using Vedic verses. The Vedic verses itself, all that deal with Vishnu, they're all brought together and put together in a way that you can understand it, how Vishnu is supreme. Otherwise, they're here and there, you won't catch. It means if just by reading that you would know, then, you know, basically all Hindus would be worshippers of Vishnu. Right, as devotees, but they don't catch it. So in the Pancharatra, it's all pulled together. And then it's pointed out, then the Lord comes as Narada Muni, and then by Narada, then the Pancharatra scriptures. Right, so he spoke the Pancharatra scripture, that's given to Narada, Narada then distributes that. And so Pancharatra is establishing, yes, as Brahman and Paramatma, he's doing everything. And he's the supreme controller, so Vishnu controls, but as Vasudev, he's beyond that position. Because then he's manifesting his pastimes as Vasudev. But he's the Lila Purush. And so then that brings us that the Pancharatra is without rival, because it tells the essence of the Veda. And it brings you to understand the position of Vasudev. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So now that we move on. So Vriti, having analyzed the first and second verses of Bhagavatam, which are the initial statements, Upakrama, the next Anucheda shows that the concluding statements, Upasamhara, collaborates with that of the initial ones, right? So because we were saying we were studying the position of Bhagavatam and comparing it to Vedanta Sutra and the Gayatri, and how the opening and closing are saying the same thing as what the Gayatri is saying, and the same thing with the Vedanta Sutra. In fact, it's actually the purport. Anucheda 106. The upasamhara, right, means in other words, you have the upakrama, how you open the book, and the upasamhara, how it closes. The upasamhara, or concluding statement, should not stray far from the upakrama, or introductory statement. Like, it won't stray far, means it may give a practical application, and that, like you see, is that when you give conclusion means how you're going to use it. Like if I say, this is the statement, so what's the conclusion? Therefore, you're going to do this. So that doing this has to be in line with the initial statement. I meditate upon that pure, spotless Lord, who is free from suffering and death, who previously revealed his incomparable lamp of knowledge to Brahma. Brahma then spoke it to the sage Narada, who narrated it to Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Srila Vyas revealed this Bhagavatam to the greatest of sages, Sukadeva Goswami, and Sukadeva mercifully spoke it to Parikshit Maharaj. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:13-19. Words like Kasmai Yena Vibhatso Yam, the Lord who revealed the scripture to Brahma, correspond to that which is described in the introductory verse. In his commentary on Atma, Vritir Itaravad, Brahma Sutra 3:17. Shankara explains that the word sat in the introductory statement means atma because of the word atma in the concluding statement. Similarly, in this concluding verse, it is shown that the speaker of the Chatushloki, who spoke to Brahma, is Bhagavan and not Gavardakshai Vishnu, since there must be correspondence with the introductory verse, and that Bhagavan alone is the object of Vyasa's meditation. The work became most attractive to Sukadeva because of this. Right. So in other words, the Bhagavan feature, which is attractive, like the sages, means Sukadeva Goswami and the four sages as Atmarams as self-realized souls. They know the position of Brahman. They know the position of Paramatma. Like that. Otherwise, why are the four Kumaras going to visit the Lord? Because he's Paramatma. He's the one who controls all this. But they were still maintaining their position of Atmaramas, and not taking up, moving from the impersonal understanding. Like that. But then you see when they come across the Bhagavan feature of the Lord, how the Lord was dealing with the devotees personally, then at that point we see they become attractive. So that's the whole point that you have to see, is that it has to be Bhagavan. Otherwise, how is it that all these personalities were attracted? Because the other is that he's Paramatma, he's Bhagavan. That's a matter of knowledge. And you can appreciate. But it's only when you get to Bhagavan that there's taste, because that's where rasa is. Rasa is with, he's the Lord of the six opulences, and those opulences are being used in interaction with the devotees. That's the Bhagavan feature. Before that, he's controlling the energies because he's God. Who else is going to do it? The existence of everything, that's him. He's God. Who else is going to do it? But as Bhagavan, then you see, then he is dealing with everything in relation, in personally, that he is a person, them as a person, how he interacts based on the personal consideration, right? So we see that's what's special about the whole process. is that personal aspect. That's the Bhagavan. So that's what we're coming closer and closer towards. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the son of Vyasa, Sukadeva Goswami, who destroys all sin, and who, though fixed in his own bliss with no distractions, became attracted to the pastimes of Krishna, and mercifully spread the Bhagavatam, which describes Krishna, and reveals the rasa of his pastimes. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:12-69. Right? So we see, again, the aspect of Bhagavan, and you see he's bringing in the points of pastimes. Right? And no distractions. Became so, you know, already it's nothing else other than that pure attraction to the Lord, right? There's no other interests. The meaning of the Upasamhara verse is this: the word has revealed Vibhatsitaha to Brahma, situated in the lotus in the navel of Garbhodakshaya by Bhagavan, whose form is described in the second canto, and who showed Mahavaikuntha to Brahma. The work was not produced at that time, however. The Bhagavatam Ayam in the beginning Parardha Pura was given by Brahma Tatrupena to Narada, and later by Narada Tatrupina to Vyasa Krishnaya, and by Vyasa Tadatmana it was given to Sukadeva Yogindraya. It was given by Sukadeva, Taratmana, understood, to Parikit, Bhagavad, Rataya. By using the phrases Tatrupena, Tadrupina, and Taratmana, it is indicated that not only was Chatushluki revealed each time, but that absorbed in their forms, Tatrupena, etc., they revealed the complete Purana. It should be understood that finally, Sutta speaks to the sages and said, I also speak the Purana to you. Right? So that means it's been spoken before. However, this does not he does not utter this out of humility. Thus, the greatness of the teachers of Bhagavatam among all teachers is shown. The Sampradaya through Sankarsana is not separately mentioned, as it is included in the revelation of Vyas. Because Vyas then sees how the Lord is there with all his energies and everything, and how he's controlling everything, and how Maya is then on one side and all that. So then that's Shankarsha. We should meditate on the Supreme Being known as Bhagavan, Satyam Param Timahi. Param means Bhagavan, as in Sahasranama Stotra. Yat Yat Param Anuttamam. He is the supreme Bhagavan without compare. Adyo Vatara Purusha Parasya. The first avatar, Mahavishnu, is an expansion of Bhagavan, Parasya. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.42, right? So this aspect, we have the Purusha avatar, is their one feature of Krishna. So they're expecting from Krishna. That's why Prabhupada, you see, it's always talking about they all expand from Krishna. Krishna is the source. Right, so when he expands into Vaikuntha, that's one mood. When he expands into the material world, that's another mood. But then he is there as Bhagavan beyond that. Right, so you're always going to have that feature. So. This verse, we should meditate on the Supreme Being. This verse also explains that the work is the meaning of Gayatri, shown by the word Dhimahi, since it inspires the intelligence of Brahma and others. It is said, Gayatri Bhashya Rupau Sau Bharata Bharatarta Vinir Naya. Bhagavatam is the commentary on the Gayatri and explains the Mahabharata, Garuda Purana. Right, so it's a commentary on the Gayatri, on how you're supposed to be meditating upon the Lord, and it explains the Mahabharata, because you see in the first canto, it explains Mahabharata. Mahabharata is 100,000 verses. Of that, 25,000 verses are about the Pandavas, and you know, in there, their relationship with Krishna. So 75,000 verses are secondary stories that are in support of those 25,000. You know, so all these different things get, like it said, how is it that the Bhagavatam came to be spoken? So then it's spoken to Parikshit Maharaj. So Parikshit Maharaj, okay. Then Parikshit Maharaj, and how, why is he there hearing it? Because of the curse. Why is there the curse? Because of, you know, him going out and hunting. Oh, how is it that he's hunting? He's a king. How is he the king? Oh, where is it he's born in this family? How is he born in this family? He just keeps going back. So all these different stories are supporting that, how it is that Sukadeva Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. Right? So then in here is that then when you say the 25,000 verses, that's about the pandavas. The 75,000, that's for things that support. And so you appreciate and understand the culture and everything that's going on that the pandavas are functioning in, because you can benefit from that. But the main point of this benefit is the pandavas, how they're applying it, that's their duty. But more importantly, what is their relationship with Krishna? And that mood and everything. That's the essential point to catch. So Bhagavatam explains that. Mahabharata has all the verses, but we may not catch that at all. Otherwise, if we would, then we'd have a lot more people who appreciate what has been said. Riti, having proved that Upakrama and Upasamhara are the same, the next anucheta describes Abhyasa, repetition, and apurvata, uniqueness. Right, because we said we were going to discuss the how, according to Sapta, what's it? It's not Saptariva, it's Sapta Paryalingas, the six different aspects that are given there, that by those you can understand the subject matter of work. And so then he's showing that these are it's the same as you're giving in the Vedanta Sutra and the Gayatri. And so now he starts off showing, you know, there's the first part, the introduction, gives a very elaborate explanation. Then here, having understood that, there's no doubts, then he shows how the ending is giving the same. So that's the second one, how the opening and closing. Now he moves on to how repetition and uniqueness, right? Abhyasa and apurvata are applied to this understanding. Anucheta 107. Abhyasa, repetition of the thing, as well as apurvata, unique qualities, is represented by the following. Narayana, the soul of the universal form, who annihilates the accumulated sins of the Kali age, is not glorified much in other works. But Bhagavan, who has unlimited forms, is abundantly and constantly described throughout the various narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12.12.66, right? So you see, he, you know, he's the soul, he annihilates the accumulated sins. He's not much glorified, but in here he's glorified. And, you know, it's being described abundantly and constantly. So that means here is the first one is the glorification, the second one is the repetition. Narayana, who is the Antaryami of the universe, Adi Kleshaha, or Vishnu, its protector, who is the destroyer, Kalanaha, of the collection of sins of Kali, is not glorified or is not glorified much, Abhikshnam, in other works, Itaratra, which propound karma or Brahman. Because on the material platform, you have karma or Brahman. You know, that's your choices within, you know, and then within each you have some variety. So when people are absorbed more of that, you don't glorify as much. You bring out the glories of karma, the glories of Brahman, so that they'll be inspired. Because the point is if it, only to be attracted by the Supreme Lord, that's simply by the grace of the Lord. That grace is then received through the Vaishnavas and through the spiritual master. So therefore then, for others, you want to keep them close. You want to keep them on the path moving towards Krishna, though they may be doing the moonwalk, you know, going backwards towards Krishna. But the point is that if they come in contact with Vaishnava, they're following the Vedic culture, right? So they're progressing, right? but they have their back to Krishna, right? So they're progressing. So then if they come in contact with Vaishnav, then they turn around towards Krishna. And then they're so much more closer. While you have those who are back with Krishna down here, not following the Vedic culture, and they're sinful as, you know, as it gets, you know? And then if you turn them around at that point, right? So then they're facing Krishna, and that's glorious, and they'll move forward. But at the same time, as some of the, you know, the finer points of the situations that they're in, the qualities, how to use those qualities, and all that are not so strong. And so then they have some difficulties because of that. Well, if you're like these ones that turn around, then you're following the Vedic culture, and then it's just very nice. You just have to switch your focus on Krishna. Well, these ones have to work out a whole thing on what to touch, what not to touch. They just, you know, stuck the finger in the mouth, how not to touch everything in the universe. And all these things, it's a very major issue for them. Well, for the others, they've been practicing that since they're a kid, so they just focus on Krishna. Right? So that's why it's recommended. That means the soul, any living entity can take up devotional service. It's just so much easier if you're not. It's like being in a kitchen. If you're in the kitchen, it's so much easier to cook than if you're out in the field and they get a couple of rocks and some sticks and get an old tin can, and now you're going to cook. Right? You know, it goes on. You can cook, and you can cook something nice, but the point is it's so much easier. So that's why it's recommended. Not that it itself is important. It's only important in its usefulness and in assisting in the service to Krishna. Right? So, therefore, those are glorified because then those who are materialistic that would by nature go away from the Vedic path, because the Vedic path is to serve Krishna. They go away from that path to just do nonsense. They get inspired that if I go after Brahman or karma, I'll get all the benefits I'm looking for. So they follow the same culture. So culturally, then you'll see is that in principle, all members of the Vedic culture all have the same lifestyle. Right, that's the same. The particular, you know, and their occupations and that fit within this framework. And then there'll be some detailed difference on, you know, what god they're worshiping, what shastra they're following, what particular form of ritual they're using, where do they emphasize. So those aspects will be different. But because they're based on Veda, it's not a problem to adjust from one to another if there's a need. Like that. Does that make sense? It's just you're already in the right place. You just have to learn how to use it properly. Right? So that's uniqueness of Bhagavatam, then glorifies the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. You know, so it's not about karma, Brahman, or even Paramatma as much. It's about Bhagavan. He who has unlimited avatar forms, Asesha-murti, he is glorified as such. In other words, he is described without much investigation. But you don't have to get into all the speculation. Described in each verse of Bhagavatam with various narrations. Bhagavan alone is revealed. Patitaha, completely pari. This verse also indicates apurvata, uniqueness of the Bhagavatam, since this form cannot be understood through other works, right? So in other works, you're not going to understand because there's not much emphasis on it, but in Bhagavatam there is, so that makes the Bhagavatam unique. Right? Sutta speaks the verse. You also saw before what was in that verse.
May I ask you?
Sorry?
Srila Prabhupada said that that people who live in India, they have advantage before they can accidentally offer obeisances to Sri Krishna and get a Gyata Sukriti. So they will get a Gyata Sukriti only if they will offer obeisances to Bhagavan form, or if they will offer obeisances to Lord Vishnu, they also will get a Gyata Sukriti.
You don't get, I mean, see, Vishnu is Krishna. We're just pointing out is that because if you're going to get after he's the Lord of Rasa, you're going to, within the context of Vishnu Tattva, you're going to understand which aspect of Vishnu Tattva is dealing more with Sat, which is dealing more with Chit, and which is dealing more with Ananda. In other words, all three are there. So when he says that Garbhodakshay Vishnu didn't instruct Brahma, but Bhagavan instructed Brahma. So that means Garbhodakshay Vishnu, in his capacity as the Paramatma of the universe, he's not in that mood. He didn't instruct Brahma. He instructed him Bhagavan as himself, as a person speaking to Brahma as a person. Right? Does that make sense? So that means all three features are there in Krishna. It's just where the emphasis is. It's just like, let's say, Vrindavan. It's not that Vrindavan is not full with majesty. It has greater majesty than any other place. But sweetness is more powerful. So therefore, you one becomes attracted by the sweetness that's there. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of which feature you're bringing out. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is you can take anything and it can have so many features. Just like, let's say you have an article of clothing. The article of clothing, you can look at it by its, you can look at it by its functionality of what it specifically does. You can look at it from the element of how well it's made. You know, the quality of it, the quality of the ingredients. You can look at it from the social prestige that's there. You know what I'm saying? You can look at all these different features, and those that look at one may not look at the other. You know, to the point where it gets excessive. Like, let's say those who deal in prestige, sometimes they design clothing that is not practical at all. You know, or is it actually made out of anything really valuable? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, forget what it's called. you might know is that you get, like, let's say these scarves, these fine scarves, you can get them out of silk. You know, they'll make some of them out of wool. And then they have this new thing, what they call, I can't remember what it's called, something like Modena, Mode, something like that. All that means is it just means it's synthetic. Like before you say it's polyester or acrylic. Now they have this fancy name that, oh, you hear that, oh, it's very high class. Like that. But it's actually not. And sometimes they even charge more for it, even though it's actually cheaper. You know, so sometimes just in these things that it gets overemphasized. So the point is Bhagavatam then gives that balance. So you see everything, all the features of the Lord, but the emphasis is on, it's the person, and from him is coming these features of Brahman and Paramatma. They're non-different from him, but you're showing when he's in the feature of Paramatma, when Krishna is in the feature of Brahman, Krishna's in the feature of Paramatma, Krishna's in the feature of Bhagavan. So you don't want to make that distinction between Vishnu and Krishna. But at the same time, there's a difference, because Krishna is in one mood as Krishna and another mood as Vishnu. But it's still the same person. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you, Guru Maharaj.
So that's the thing in here. We're just bringing it closer and closer to the sweetness that's there in serving Krishna in his pastimes with the residents of the spiritual world, and especially that of the dog. Because now we're establishing how he's, you know, Vasudeva, and how he's above that. But then the next thing you're going to show is how, as Bhagavan, you know, Vasudeva being beyond, meaning because Vasudeva is that aspect of Bhagavan. But it's just a matter of being Bhagavan, how much is the expanding his energies. I mean, you know, I mean his opulences and interacting with them. So that makes sense. Like with the feature of Vasudeva, he doesn't expand the internal potency as such, where he's personally interacting. So when he's killing the demons, it's him killing the demons. But it's a pastime. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the emphasis is more in the pastime and less that he's on God, but you don't see the internal potency manifest. right? But then when he manifests the internal potency, then you see then he's taking part in pastimes in you know, interacting with the devotees. Does that make sense? So it's just different features of himself. It's just like, let us say a person is there and they're with their best friend, but at the same time, they're in this very formal situation. Okay? You know, so they're dressed properly, they're standing properly, they're talking properly and all that. But if there's ever a moment where there's a gap in that formality, the two friends will look at each other and smile and laugh, you know, something. That's their personal interaction. But with anything else, is that, yeah, like that, oh, yes, yeah, have a good day, sir, and this and that, you know, immediately. So that's the whole thing. It's the same person. But in this environment, then he's God. In this environment, he doesn't have to do that. He's just friends. You know, just the two of them are sitting someplace together. They don't have to worry about it from that. Does that make sense? You know, or let's say there's someone else like that, okay, you know, they're having a problem, then don't worry, I'll take care of it. But they don't personally take care of it, they just get it done from their enemies. You understand? So all these different features, so we're bringing it all back to it's Bhagavan, it's Krishna. So what you're doing is you're seeing the features of God and starting from the ones closest to what we can relate to of the impersonal, but how the impersonal is actually coming from the personal, so there is no such thing as impersonal at all. Then starting that, then how that works, he pervades, then how he pervades everything, right, through his energies, then how he controls all that, right? Because the impersonal just means it's there, existing, right? You know, like in the pillar here, you know, it's existing, and the potencies of the pillar are existing in the pillar. Right, but then that will be controlled, so that now it's manifest as this pillar, and this pillar does certain work and everything like that, you know, for a certain amount of time, by the action of individuals who are there. Does that make sense? Right, but then there is what are you doing in that environment? You've pervaded everything. You control everything. Now you have a nice environment, right? Now you, with your willpower, you do something. Does that make sense? So there's three different features that are there. So that aspect of you how you enjoy things, you know, and then the willpower is simply engaging the knowledge and skills that are the, you know, these all-pervading and how you control it all. That's just, that's the feature there. Then that takes on the serving the Lord. Does that make sense? So in other words, you have Krishna's desire as the topmost, Bhagavan. Then you have the willpower, the ability to use the field as the second one. And then the third will be, what is the technical point of the existence, mechanics of everything in the field? You know, what relates to what goes where, everything like this. It's just the impersonal aspect. You know, you have the earth. On the earth goes a floor. On the floor goes a chair. On the chair goes a person. It's just that's how it works. Willpower is wanting to put that together. But desire is then what is going to be fulfilled, what experience is going to be gained from that. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that the intellectual is the highest tier, but on the spiritual world, it's the lowest. So the experiential here is the lowest, but in the spiritual world, it's the highest. Right? In Vrindavan, it's just about they like Krishna, interacting with Krishna. It has nothing to do with he's God and he's supreme and he controls. In Vaikuntha, it does. That's why they're worshiping. He's God. That's why they. Otherwise, they're not that enthusiastic.
Guru Maharaj,
yeah.
I was asked in lecture, one devotee asked, if people of Abrahamic religion will offer obeisances to God without knowing who is he, why will they not get the same Sukriti? Is it because they don't know his form? Is it because he offer obeisances without knowing his form, or it because of their attitude?
The point is that, see, religion is religion, right? And so religion being religion, then you're going to have the aspect of that its purpose is to develop love for God, right? And so then the point that the soul is the eternal servant of the Lord, and then by that combination of their adding their will power connected with desire to please God, that combination, that's the inherent bhakti within the living entity, right? The inherent nature for devotional service. And the material platform is where you're taking that knowledge and skills and all that, and it's for your own pleasure. So you're leaving the Lord out of it. So it appears like it's sambandha abhidaya and prayojana, but that prayojana is leaving out the Lord, who's actually the goal, the natural position. And so now you're taking it, now it's between myself and dead matter. The dead matter only exists. And it can be a medium for the different potencies and qualities to be there and manifest, but they themselves are not going to be a source of happiness for the living entity, because they're unconscious. So that means the supreme consciousness has to be pervading everything to even give it a flavor. So therefore, they've turned away from the Lord. They're not acknowledging the Lord's position. And then because of this turning away, they're suffering because things don't work out very good for them, right? And so that's because they're mistaking that the matter is giving me happiness when it can't, of the soul. So then the natural thing is if whatever I'm looking for is coming from the Supreme, why wouldn't I use all of my activities in context of the Supreme, right? Just like we see in this world, I do something to please myself. Okay, it's nice, but I do something to please someone else, it's better. So therefore, if I'm trying to please myself in this world, if I try to please so that supreme, someone else is God. So that's your essential point of religion, is therefore express that devotion to the Lord, that trying to develop that love for the Lord through hearing, chanting, remembering, all these things. The Vedas just give the thing as it is. And the others, they take parts of it and use it as the time, place, and circumstance. So another eternal religion is given. And according to the locale in that, then people take on what aspects of it they like and practice it as they like. But its purpose is still there. So therefore, if they follow their own padati very nicely with the purpose of trying to develop love for God, then why wouldn't it work? That's what it's for. You're following the laws of God. You're doing that to please God. If you're following the laws of God because I'll get a material benefit for it, then that's not actually the ultimate purpose of religion. Right? So the point is that the ritual, the language that's being used, the particular dress, particular food, that's because of the locale. It's just like here. At lunchtime here in Mayapur or in Bengal, if you cook lunch for a Krishna, you're going to cook rice with the vegetables and that, right? But if you're in North India, then you're going to cook chapatis and vegetables, and there'll be a little bit of rice at the end. Does that make sense? So in the locale, you have that. You know, you go farther out, and it changes again. You know what I mean? So the chapatis become leavened, so they become puffy, and then you go a little bit farther over, then they stop putting the leavening in them and make them into long sticks. Right? You know, so that makes sense. You know, you go farther over again, you have rice and then you have beef. So it's just wherever it is that they have the local thing. So the point is that the principle of it can be followed by anyone. But then you have to see is that those rituals, as you progress, those rituals that are based on karma or jnana, those naturally are given up, just like within the Vedic context of all the wide range of religious activities to engage the living entities. As you progress in pure devotion, those that are based on karma and jnana, those are given up. You know, like worship of the demigods and worship of the Pitris or things like that. So naturally then in these world religions, then those elements that are opposed to pure bhakti, those would be given up. But otherwise, offering respect to God, what's wrong with that? You know what I'm saying? Someone offers their respects to God, you know, how you say, five times a day. Someone else then, you know, has their different things of morning and evening or something like that. Or then, you know, in the Vedic, then it's whenever you're doing the worship or you see a temple, it's just given that these are. So respect is there, right? Remembrance is there, chanting the names are there, right? Does that make sense? So that principle, then they're always going to get benefit. If they weren't getting benefit, then how are they coming to Krishna consciousness? They're getting a jata sukriti, and then when they meet the pure devotees, they take it up. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they're getting benefit. But you have to understand is that the difference in that, you don't worry about the difference. It's just how they engage those people. But as you go, you naturally give up those things that are not important, like, let's say, meat eating. So the Abrahamic, they're quite cool with meat eating. But they regulate it. If they're strict, they regulate it. It's not just any old thing at any old time. It has to be regulated. But as you see, is why would I kill other living entities when they're all connected to God, right? They're all children of God. So why would I disturb them? So therefore, then that's given up. Are we still on the air? Everything's still working? It looked like everybody froze. We're running?
Working, Maharaj.
You can hear what we're saying?
Yes, yes, Maharaj.
Okay, just so the individuals have frozen. Okay. Yeah. Does that make some sense? But that Mataji is still frozen.
I think her net is gone.
Oh, okay. Okay, but for everybody else, that's all right. It's understood. Because a fine point, because otherwise people get into saying, oh, this is wrong or that's wrong. No, if it's a religious principle that's authorized, it's not wrong. It's just that, you know, what's its purpose? And as you progress, does it still have a value? You know, just like chanting the Lord's names, that should be there. But then you see what kind of names, because then you see is that if you want to develop love for God, as is going to be pointed out, you're developing love for Krishna as Bhagavan. But all these others that use the controllers, the maintainers, the destroyer, like chanting the Paramatma, that's not going to develop your love for God. You're going to be purified, you're going to move closer. But you're actually going to be attracted by Krishna because he's the all attractive, that there for the name. Does that make sense? You know, so therefore, naturally, then certain names are used. Unlimited names are there, and they're all a benefit, but it's just naturally certain things are more specific. The word two indicates emphasis. But Bhagavan is glorified constantly in Bhagavatam, Iha. He who has unlimited avatar forms, Asesham or Dihi, is glorified as such. In other words, he is described without much investigation. Right? So he's mentioned, but you don't get so much into detail. Bhagavatam is described in each verse of Bhagavatam with various narrations. Right, so in every verse of Bhagavatam, it's describing the Lord and his pastimes as Bhagavan. Bhagavan alone is revealed, patitaha, completely, pari. The verse also indicates a purvata, uniqueness of the Bhagavatam, since this form cannot be understood through other works. Sutta speaks the verse, right? Riti. Next, Vihanucheda. Well, next, the fallout, the result is detailed, right? Because that's also another one of the aspects. So you have the beginning, the end. Then you're going to have the, what we say, the uniqueness and the repetition. Now the next is the fallout, the result, right? The result of studying Bhagavatam is that the heart gets cleansed of all the sins and bhakti for the Supreme Lord appears, right? And of that, then bhakti for the Lord is the primary and cleansed of all sins is the secondary. Like I make a place ready for hosting guests, I'm going to clean it. It's not about, oh, no, we're cleaning the room, get it clean, and that's the deal. And then if people come, then it's always a problem because they make a mess. No, it's about making it ready for inviting people. That means you're putting it clean. Anucheda 108. The fallout result is described. Those who drink the sweet pastimes of the Lord and his devotees, held in the cups of their ears, clean their hearts of all contamination and attain the lotus feet of the Lord for service. See, they attain the lotus feet of the Lord for service. So that position of liberation, they get freed from all contamination, attain the lotus feet. That position of liberation is for service. Therefore, that's why the devotees aren't worried about liberation, because liberation is only for the purpose of service. But if I can do service now, what's the value of liberation? Right, it's like stand in this line, and then you know, stand in this line. Okay, why are you standing in the line? Because then you'll get something when you come up to the front of the line, right? But if you're already getting the benefit of what you get from the front of the line, why do you need to stand in the line? So for the devotees, then liberation is not important for them because they're already serving Krishna, and so the purpose of religion, the purpose of liberation is already obtained in service to Krishna. Both of them are already there because the ultimate religion is that following the laws of God with that selfless sacrifice, right? And liberation means not having any material connection. So they have no material desire for themselves. So being freed from all material contamination and desire, they perform their duties to please Krishna. So all the perfection of karma and jnana is there. So they don't need to go anywhere to do that. They're already here engaging in devotional service, the perfection. And so whether they're here or there, you're going to do the same thing. Right? Like that. So we see there that the associates of the Lord are serving the Lord. And then when they come to the material world to take part in the Lord's pastimes here, then they're also, again, just engaged in serving the Lord. So there's never a situation where they're not serving. So that's why for the devotee, they don't care about liberation, because it's not that, oh, only when I'm liberated, and that would be the good position. No, you can serve wherever you are now. Yeah. Those who drink the sweet pastimes of the Lord, who is the life, Atmanaha, of the devotees, Satam, purify their hearts. Or those who drink the sweet pastimes of the Lord, whom the devotees take as their own, Atmanaha, clean their hearts. They have possessiveness, taking him as their possession. The chief sweet stories are in the Bhagavatam, the object of study. Right? So Bhagavatam has the chief main stories. So many stories are there. Like we got all the other stories are all in Mahabharata. That was the whole point. He said, if you take all the Vedic literature and take all the essential points that are there, you know, in anything, they're all brought together in one place in the Mahabharata. So by studying the Mahabharata, you know everything in the Vedic literature. But the problem is it doesn't bring out the essence of the about Krishna and his pastimes with the devotees. Though they're there, but it's not the emphasis. Yeah, because you're trying to summarize, you know, 14 books of Vedic knowledge. So then Bhagavatam just focuses on the transcendental and of that of Bhagavan. And in that, all the other features of the Lord, all the other aspects of the background of the other 14 books are explained in essence. And so then that becomes the point. So we see here, you drink the sweet pastimes, you'll purify the heart. But those who drink, whom the devotees take as their own, clean their hearts, right? So either I'm hearing the pastimes of the Lord, my heart is becoming purified, I'm coming close to the Lord. Or those who, they value the Lord, and that's why they want to hear, then that sense of the possession of that the Lord is, I have that relationship with the Lord, then that cleans the heart. So either way, the heart is being cleaned. But you see, one is passive, one is dynamic. Like that. By hearing Bhagavatam, bhakti for the Supreme Lord Krishna appears. Hearing it also destroys lamentation, illusion, and fear in the human being. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.7. Right? So means bhakti appears. Hearing it also destroys, means hearing it. And so the point is from Bhagavatam, you get the bhakti for Supreme Lord Krishna appears. As a side thing, then destroys lamentation, illusion, and fear of the human being. Right? So lamentation, you know, is mode of ignorance, illusion, you know, is also there, fear because you're identifying the material platform. So all these things go away. Then you actually are hearing things properly. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Sukadeva speaks the verse. Riti. Artavad. Okay. Artavad, praise is described next. The Supreme Lord, okay, praise is there, right? Uniqueness has been given. Repetition has been given. Results have been given. And now praise is given. The Supreme Lord is praised by all the demigods and sages through the Vedic hymns and their corollaries. It is glorified also by the yogis who are absorbed in him, the object of their meditation. Anucheda 109. So it's interesting to follow the result, the topmost point, the core point of the whole thing, right? You know, what's the result? Notice what number Anucheda? Anucheda 109. Artavad, praise, is expressed in the following. Unto that personality whom Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra, and the Maruts praise by chanting the transcendental hymns of the Vedas, with all their corollaries, verses, and Upanishads, whom the chanters of the Samaveda glorify, whom the perfected yogis see within their minds after fixing themselves in meditation, and whom neither the devatas nor demons can fathom, unto Bhagavan I offer my respects. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.12.1. Brahma and others praise Bhagavan and the verse of praise, Stavahi, and the Vedas. The yogis see him by their minds being absorbed in him through fixed meditation. Dhyana Vastita Tadgatayana. Sutta speaks the verse. Yes. So we see us here is that Bhagavatam is Krishna, because it says, you know, how will the Lord be approached in this age of Kali after his disappearance, after his apricot, you know, his prakat pastimes become apricot? Then it said through Bhagavatam. So that's why praise of Krishna as Bhagavan or praise of Bhagavatam, either way is bringing out the same, because they're both Krishna. Riti. The position of Bhagavan as the chief form is also discerned by reason, upapatti. So now reason, Anucheda 110. Upapatti, reasoning, is expressed in the following. The devotee understands the Supreme Lord in all beings by the presence of Paramatma. The jiva is inferred by symptoms such as observing such as observable intelligence and by conclusive inference. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.3.5. First, the jiva, drashta, is known, lakshitaha, by intelligence and other means. Udyabihi. Two ways are shown. The jiva is known by inconclusive reasoning, lakshanaihi, concerning a conscious seer, perception, drishyai. Of insentient objects like intelligence cannot take place without a seer who is self-revealing or conscious, right? So things don't happen unless there is a sentient entity. We don't see anything happening. You can have a pile of bricks sit there for years, but a person comes along and it turns into a house or a driveway or something, right? But otherwise it doesn't happen. So everything that's going on that we can understand, it's not happening by chance. There's consciousness. So in the body, you see as things are happening, decisions are made, things are going on. Then you can see is that there is intelligence is there, right? Because things are, there's plans are being made, right? And depending upon the individual, then their level of consciousness and their level of analyzation and seeing the time, place, and circumstance, that may vary. Does that make sense? And so the point is there is intelligence, there is that determination in that. So even in the animals, you can see this intelligence. They, you know, if the ant is walking, you put your finger there, they can come and they go around your finger. They don't try to chew through your finger or something. And even if they are chewing through your finger, it means that they see it's something different. So they're making an adjustment. It's intelligence. The jiva is also known by conclusive reason or vyapti. Anu ma pakaihi. Intelligence must be employed by an agent, just as an axe needs a person holding it in order to cut a tree. Right. So you have that, you know, that there's, you just see that things are going on, so intelligence can't take place, but then you can actually make a conclusion that there is intelligence, therefore this is happening. Bhagavan is also known how? By Antaryami, Swatmana, his Amsha, who has entered into all beings, who are seers, the seers, Sarvabhuteshu. First, Antaryami is known by all seers. Then, by that knowledge, Bhagavan is understood. That is inferred in two ways as previously. Antaryami is perceived by preliminary logic. The action of all jivas cannot occur without a particular inner instigator. Since one sees that the doer and enjoyer, jiva, is not independent, and since karma as a cause of its actions is essential. Right? So the jiva he's not independent. He's dependent upon nature. He performs his duty. And by that karma, material nature is transforming. He's getting a result. But he's not causing the transformation. You know what I'm saying? He's dependent. Does that make sense? You know, like, let's say you put something in a frying pan like that. And then the item that you put in the frying pan starts to change color. Right? You're not changing the color. You're just going through the process by which color can change, but you're not changing the color. You can say, oh yeah, no, I cooked it like that. No, you use the process by which material energy made it happen, right? So he's conscious, he's doing, but why would that happen? What means, as we see, is that there has to be consciousness for there to be change, for there to be action. So therefore, we're doing, but we're independent, we're dependent. And then we're dependent upon material energy, which is unconscious. So that means it also has to be functioning by consciousness. What is that consciousness that's making it function? Right, that. So that's independent. That happens on its own. We're here. That's the laws. You do something, you get that, but it's still independent. And so therefore, we're dependent upon the Lord. He's the one that's actually the one doing. Does that make sense? Yeah. How we do it. Okay. Esha yanein atmana chakshusha darshayati shrotamena shravati shravayati manasa manayati buddhaya bodayati tasmad eta Vahu Shrir Ashriti. The Paramatma makes the jiva see by the eye, hear by the ear, contemplate by the mind, become aware by the intelligence. Therefore, they call one the known jiva and the other the unknown, the Lord. Bala Deya Shruti. Right? So he makes them see through the eye. The Lord already sees. And then through your eye, you can see what he sees according to what you're qualified for by your pramana chaitanya. You have a certain karma that this much you can see, but you're seeing through that. So the Lord's making him see through that. You can't see through his hands or something. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. 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 Hare.